We have something that's called interleaved thinking. Before, each time the LM was thinking and giving you an answer, it was dropping the initial thinking. And right now, it sort of is able to take back its initial thinking, refine it, and each time interleaving its thinking in between your answers. So it gives you a long context, let's say, long context view on what you are doing.
Thanks everybody for joining us today for Defender Fridays. My usual pitch is, we get to talk to all kinds of people in the security industry doing interesting things. Usually it's very Defender specific mostly. Today we're stretching that a little bit, but it's still for the same Defender cause, even though it sounds like it's the red team, but at the end of the day, it's all blue team. We just want to make that circle bigger, have those conversations. This is not a slideshow. This is really just meant to be a conversation. So feel free to chime in. And today we have Charles with us. How's it going?
Well, it's going pretty well. Nice to meet you. Yeah, I'm not on the defender side as you mentioned. More on the red teaming part. So yeah, about trying to be on the other side and
Right. Well, if you ask me, the red team is just like the it's like the feeding, the top of funnel for a lot of blue teams. So I think
QA
I think
for defense is offense.
Exactly. maybe do you want to start by doing a quick introduction about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Charles, French, my name, you can see. So yeah, I'm the CTO of Pentix. So a company that we founded with Daniel, which I don't know, he should be here in a second, that aims at automating pen testing with AI. So the point is to have a continuous testing of defenses thanks to AI capacities and the fact that it never sleeps. So yeah, it's quite convenient. So yeah, I would say that's the whole idea we are working on.
Very cool, very cool. I should have known that you were French. I kind of like went quickly over your last name. Now that I look at it, it's like mine. It's like, yeah, obviously it's French. So I speak French too, but we'll skip that for everybody else. that's really interesting. Like it feels like red team is one of those like again, kind of like obvious like. Yeah, there's going to be some, some interesting use of AI in order to go and do that. But I'm kind of curious to get like your take on what has it meant so far in the pen testing? Like where are we? Are we already at the like everything's fully automated and everything, or are we kind of like somewhere on that road?
Well, that's a good question. I see in the chat. Other like our concurrents. So yeah, we are a lot to work on this part, let's say, because there is still some things to be done, and we have always let's say challenge to tackle. But for most of the let's say the big bulk of job when doing pen testing, I would say we are pretty good. For some niche edge case, might need some fine tuning still. But definitely, we are way, way better than 1 year or 2 years ago. I can tell you because I started actually Pentix, working on Pentix prototyping 2 years ago, and AI were really not able to do this kind of thing. And I saw really a dramatic improve of all the different. Also, I see in the chat, it's another company that I'm in, Jeff. So in Pentax, I could see over the last 2 years a real improvement over the LM in general, the capabilities, especially in the let's say the chaining vulnerabilities was something that really improved. So yeah, definitely I could see we are reaching really almost on par with mid-level pen tester.
Oh, cool. I feel like you've opened that topic. I love having somebody that's kind of like really worked on that, right? Can you take us a little bit through that evolution, like you say, over the last couple of years, it's changed a lot. Like, what were the parts that worked right away from the beginning? Like, how did it fail? How did you kind of like work your way through that? Because I feel like that's almost universal, even
Yeah,
outside of pen testing. It's super interesting.
definitely, definitely. I remember when I started studying AI in university, you couldn't have a sentence correctly spelled, you know? Then we had some paragraphs that were correctly spelled and so on. But you see, in cyber, for doing, I don't know, simple Nmap, I don't know, GoSpider, this kind of usage, 2 years ago, open source LLM like Llama 3 at the time, we're not really able to 100% of the time nail it. You know, it wouldn't nail it. It wouldn't nail it because there was always, you know, a misspelling, something that breaks everything, which is really like problematic when you are chaining a ton of command and stuff like that. Let's say 1 year ago, we were at a point where we could really rely on LLM to really produce relevant commands, but it would struggle from the strategical point of view, if you see what I mean. And since 6 months, really, from the whole process of strategizing, planning, in agentic AI world, we always have this pattern with plan and execute. I mean, it's the basic pattern, but with a lot of variants, as you can guess. Since six months, really, the capacities of LLM in terms of planning and reviewing a plan and restrategize it really dramatically increased. And to give a bit of order of estimates for people to understand, at the very beginning, I was saying that it couldn't chain, let's say, three command without making a fail in syntactically. Then it was able to chain five, six command, but it would diverge in terms of logic because it was losing the context, it wasn't really keeping its focus. And then since 6 months, we talk about really holding context of a 100K token, which then you can synthesize and you can reinject, you can always do tricks, you know. But really, we talk about machines that are able to have attention on a lot of things at the same time and make the best decision, or at least a relevant decision. I mean, the best decision is something very subjective to say. But yeah, really dramatic improvement, and really since October, really you can feel something change in the
I
industry.
think automated pen testing has some interesting aspects because you got models needing to work well over a very long context windows where output from prior commands could be very, very important. And I think it is relatively recent, last 6 months, that open weights models have been able to do that pretty reliably. You need the usage either via skills, kind of just in time injected markdown, or the weights of the models themselves to actually know how to use the tools. Which usually takes either some custom fine-tuning or again those skills. Like there's a lot of relatively recent things that that we've just kind of gotten as an industry that are pretty necessary for these longer term operations. Like even auto compaction, I'm sure we've all been there of like really hoping the answer comes out in the last 1% before it gets auto compacted. Oh no, I lost everything. Like can feel that way sometimes with the auto compaction not working quite properly.
Yeah, that's definitely a relevant remark in the sense that a lot of recent improvement on LLM are around long context prompt. Like if you think about it, like all these things, I know if you guys are familiar with the recent advancement in LLM, but like we have something that's called interleaved thinking. Before, each time the LLM was thinking, then giving you an answer, it was dropping the initial thinking. And right now, it sort of is able to take back its initial thinking, refine it, and each time interleaving its thinking in between your answers. So it gives you a long context, let's say, long context view on what you are doing right now. So yeah, as you were saying, Jeff, it's really something recent that open, even closed weight model, to be honest, were not really, 1 year ago, they were not really able to hold very long context on pen testing. So it's not really, there is not that much of a gap between open source and closed source. And if you want really the best LM model for your case, it's always an open source that you fine tune. This is unparalleled. I mean, of course, I'm not saying of fine tuning a 4 billion model, but let's not get into too technical. But if you want really something that's suited, you need to fine tune in a way.
Oh yeah, so I'm curious to dig just a tiny bit on that, because that's been at least like personally how I look at it, kind of the duality here of, how do I get better? I can either get better by injecting more context and skills, which it's kind of all context, or I can do actual fine-tuning on the model. How has that trade-off changed over time? How do you think about that trade-off?
I would say that right now, if you train your model, it's really that you have a very specific case that you know that you will use a lot. Really use in context learning if you're really not sure. Start always by in context learning, then do some kind of injection from RAG. This kind of thing should be tried before fine tuning because, yeah, fine tuning is another beast. Really, it gets more mathematical and so on, which is not always what we want
It also
to
means
spend
there's
our
a
time.
heck of a lot more friction before you can try out a new model. Whereas if you do, so in context learning RAG, think of it like it's internal Clippy saying, it looks like you're trying to use Nmap. Here's some basic usage. It looks like you're trying to use this tool. Here's some basic usage. Providing that to the model just in time, as opposed to trying to fine tune it in, because fine tuning ties you more into that one model that must be open weights in order if you did fine tune. I think the vast majority of the benefit is there with longer context windows of putting the skills in instead, or the RAG lookup, et cetera. And it means you can be a lot more flexible with, hey, let's try out a new model is not a month-long task. It's all right, swap the endpoint, swap the model in OpenRouter and test how it goes. Go against your own benchmark, because as always, the best benchmark is your own benchmark.
Yeah, but I would go I would also mention something on the on this endpoint thing. I know in our industry in cyber it's rather relevant to have some kind of privacy especially doing pen testing. So I'm giving right now an argument to use open source actually. That's to me it's also important to not leak to an endpoint the fact that this
Absolutely. I should have spoken. Like, I know you do a lot with Hack the Box and such. And for a benchmark of does this model make it through to the end of retrieving the flag or not, that's fair game for like OpenRouter or whatever. For customer data, not so much. Your website is not quite as blunt on it, but do you host your own models? Is that something you're willing to say? Like VLLM or whatever internally?
Yeah,
Okay.
we do. For privacy reason.
At the very least, you have a really strong argument for doing so. We can all point to like, well, there's a checkbox in OpenRouter for don't use this for training, but you are fundamentally giving client data to a third party.
At the end of the day, you're just sending data to an endpoint. You don't know what happens beyond.
Yes.
Yeah,
HTTP
that's the
post, and then
main.
magic happens afterwards. Magic that you can't see.
Just about the whole training thing. Training is a slippery landscape, as we were saying, but it definitely is getting better in the sense that researchers are working on making it simpler and more accessible. And it while it's still quite complex to train, it's getting much better than 2 years ago. For instance, if you check, especially I'm thinking of DeepSeek, of course, but even DeepSeek has produced the GRPO method, which is extremely important, if not the most important paper of 2025. Yeah, it was beginning of 2025, I think. But what I am
Right here.
saying is that a lot of papers are making it simpler. A lot of methods in open source package are getting developed. Very good package also that are independent from the classical big ones are building in the ecosystem, and this you can feel it helps a lot. I have a few examples. Unslot, if you guys heard of it, which is really the bread and butter when you start training LLM. I'm thinking also about more niche art package from OpenPipe, which basically allows you to make multi-turn training really easily. But wait, the whole point of of my digression is to show that the training part of the environment is getting better, much better, because there is a lot to do to be to make this accessible for people. A lot of line of code to make properly, and yeah, it's getting more mature. That's my whole point.
Is it getting mechanically easier or conceptually easier? Because as a let's say like lightweight interest in training or fine tuning, To me, the thing that was always difficult is, yes, there's the barrier of entry of like mechanically, how do I feed the different training sets and all that? But there's also the conceptual difficulty, which is, you know, when I think about like, hey, I want this LLM to, I'm going to pick just like a random example, I don't know, emit commands that that chain more into one another than others, like in Linux. The way I think about that, or maybe it's like I wanted to write in a less pedantic way, right? Like simpler wording or stuff like that. The way I think about that is as a human giving English instructions, whereas at least back when I was looking quite a bit at fine-tuning was really much more bare metal, where it's like, if you see this sentence comes out, and it's like and then you start to say, well, how do I make the pedant, like it's just different ways of thinking, right? It's still the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's still the same in the sense that it's still much harder approach. And yeah, as I see in the chat, really always start by a few shot prompting. Totally agree, Jeff. So you never, you will, you still never start by that. Never. That being said, there is two things to address. Mechanically, it's getting much easier. That's for sure. But also conceptually, because new methods that are, let's say more to the point that well, I don't want to get very mathematical, but since PPO, so the first reinforcement learning that was really applied on LM, to my knowledge at least, so it was 10 years ago, a bit 9 years ago, a lot of things changed. Like the method that we use, they are doing more or less the same results with less complexity in terms of the data you need to format in to pass in a specific format, less complexity in terms of artifact you need to have to make the training work. Like for instance, the BPO, so this very first method, needed you to train an auxiliary model first, and then use this auxiliary model to then train your LM. So it was, and you had to really think just to train the first one, to then train the second one. It was complicated, trust me. And generally, very, very few labs would actually train at the time. Really, you would be basically open AI to train such things. Right now, it's accessible to someone that even consumer on consumer laptop GPU, you can train a model. If you guys want to check, for instance, Liquid AI, which is an excellent AI lab, they made models that are returnable on consumer GPU that, I don't know, I have 8 gigs of VRAM, which is, it's not cheap GPU, but it's something that someone can have just to play video games, And 9 years ago, you would need to be OpenAI to train models. So you see where we are going. Like really, my point is to say that, yeah, it's getting easier and easier. Everything is getting better, and at a pace that I think was isn't seen in the history of technology, really. Like, I'm always feeling behind because everything is popping up. I'm
Yeah.
waking up someday. I'm like, this library exists. I just know nothing. I just feel really dumb.
The rate of change itself is increasing. Yes.
Yeah.
It's
Exactly.
exhausting. Yeah. So am I thinking about it the right way? Then if I kind of go back a little bit to like the first part, like you were talking about how early with the models, like chaining, like the basic mechanics were really hard. So, did you essentially kind of like over the years build up from like can you run an nmap to can you run an nmap and this to you're like all the way into more complex attack scenarios? Are kind of you going up the stack in that way? Is that right?
That's actually well, a very relevant question. Oh, we build a stack because I'm thinking about it right now, and I realize I made some mistakes sometimes in terms of, oh, I build the things, in the sense that it was pretty hard to predict that it would go that fast, this progress. So in the very beginning, to be honest, it was really not free enough, the model. I would say it was too it was, as you said, like, okay, you want to do this, you should use nmap, which is completely irrelevant. Even 1 year after we started, it was completely irrelevant, and I just dumped this work, but the whole point is that it was a very long exploratory work. trying something. Sometimes you try something for 2 weeks and it's completely useless. And then you retry something until you reach that sweet spot where you give enough freedom to your model for him to accomplish the task, but not enough for him to go bananas, you know? And each time you have to really be really this process is really iterative and it's quite complex. And each time you have a new model, this change a bit, you know, you can allow more freedom. So I would say in terms of building the stack, it's not you shouldn't see it as building the stack, is to go from something very guided to something that's completely free. Right now it's not completely free because you shouldn't live completely free, and never. It's something a bit crazy to do that. So it's always guardrails and stuff and the stuff like that. But yeah, exactly. What I see in the chat, I'm struggling to say it, but it's better a phrase that I could have. So it's between the model control and the code control, and that's the whole gradient I could see from very high code control to very high model control that we are in currently. Currently the model is really restricted on very specific action by very specific guardrails. But apart from that, it's really quite free, to be honest. Quite free. He has tools, of course, that he has to use. We are not allowing everything. No, don't get me wrong. He has a list of tools that are approved and so on. But yeah, it's really this whole process of building from zero freedom to full freedom.
It feels like, in a way, you kind of lived, the adage now of build for the models that will be there in 6 months. I think that there's kind of some truth to that, right? Depending, at what stage of building you are. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on, you're looking at this from the pen testing side of thing, which is like the legitimate, organized, attack. How do you feel about the whole topic of like AI-driven attackers? So attackers using the same similar kind of technology that you are, but for, just for pure criminal outcomes.
Well, that's a bit scary because you see, from our side, we have this contract to try this IP and so on. If you really are malicious, you can just spam attack day and night constantly. It costs GPU. It costs GPU. But on this part, to be honest, I'm not very optimistic, so I don't know if I want to say what I think. But yeah, it allows the attacker to basically, they are enabled with a lot of tools that we really have to counter, and the only way to counter them is to use those tools on our side. And yeah, I'm not talking just about doing penetration testing and so on, but even from, I don't know, the SOC point of view, a lot of AI can be used, and not just LLM too. Like really, we have to have automated defense to counter those automated attacks that will multiply by an exponential level. Like and I'm quite pessimistic actually for a reason. Earlier in the conversation, I was mentioning Liquid AI, which I'm quite impressed by, honestly, that they are really good, a good lab. They are working on making those agents at a small scale very efficient. Okay, so they are really focusing on the LLM acting on their environment, but using a lot, a very small number of parameters. And I could see them working. And right now, their model are quite able to do research on your email box, which seems, I know it seems not much compared to our usage of Claude, but back then, models their size, it couldn't really even write a sentence. Like right now, it can actually act properly, and it's impressive. So if you have those small parameter model that you can run on consumer laptop or something like that, it means that anyone can use them and spam it to attack. And that, honestly, I don't really have an optimistic answer to
For
that
better or
yet.
for worse, it's providing more capabilities to essentially all of humanity, for good and for bad. RTX 3090 down here, 24 gigs of VRAM, can do what the Qwen 3.6 27 billion that Charles is probably familiar with. For it's getting close to like Sonnet 4.5, 4.6 capabilities from a single local GPU, as many tokens as you want to give it time at a pretty decent pace.
Totally
If
true.
it's humans on the defense and attackers on the offense, and there's enough attack surface, then eventually your humans will not be moving fast enough to keep up.
And here the defense side, I'm pretty sure like a lot of people are working on that, but I think not enough. That's the thing, like not enough from the defense side. Really, it's a it, because we are at the brink of an era in which really, as Jeff was saying, something low class in terms of number of parameter can be run to produce an attack, a relevant attack. I don't know if you are familiar with heuristic model or ability model. Those models are unrestricted in what they can do. You know, when you speak to ChatGPT, it will tell you that's not ethical, blah, blah, blah. You have a lot of models that are accessible, even on the Hugging Face. I'm giving bad ideas right now, but on the Hugging Face, you have models that have no censorship. Yeah, I see the
Yeah,
link.
Huey, Huey, and there's plenty of obliterated models where like, hey, you can do fine tuning. So let's have some prompts that currently cause refusals and then change the weight so they no longer refuse. And there's more to it. Like you are generally losing a little bit of intelligence to do so, but generally it's a race to the bottom for refusals, because if OpenAI refuses to do something that Anthropic allows, then people will flock to Anthropic for those use cases and vice versa. Let alone with open weights models, there's a lot of intelligence baked in, and the last little bit of refusal is relatively trivial to bypass.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I feel a bit like we just invented the rifle, and everyone can be under the rifle, and the police is not suited for this kind of case. And we are just in the beginning of this era, really. Many people think, "Oh, I lost the train of AI and stuff like that." Oh no, really, it's just starting. It's just starting. Our world is just really like at the start of a really a revolution, in my opinion. Yeah, it's something that has to be tackled in a way. And as I was saying, not enough people on the defense side, in my opinion.
Yeah, it feels to me like it's the same proportion challenge that we've had in the past, defensive, offensive, meaning, the classic, like an attacker just has to be wrong once kind of thing. So the proportion hasn't changed, but the scale, or like the absolute numbers, are way bigger. So like the difference is just so much exaggerated. I think it's going to be a year or a couple of years of hell until we figure out how to bring back balance to all of this. But I mean, we're seeing it just the last couple of weeks, right? It's just like kernel vulnerabilities. I mean, Jeff did a chat on Defender Fridays a couple of weeks ago on that. But like, GitHub stuff, more NPM evil packages. It's just yeah. And
Security
on that
topics
optimistic,
haven't been
yeah.
investigated because it required human attention. And now we can replace that human attention with AI attention for essentially all of the things. And that's resulting in a lot of churn right now.
Yeah.
It has to be done like this AI implementation on the defense side. There is no other way.
That's right. That's how technology works, unfortunately. But it just is.
Unfortunately,
It's
we
all
will see.
dual use. Yep.
Thanks a lot, Shao, for coming in. That was super interesting. I think certainly we don't get like the pen testing kind of like perspective, all of that, and then combining that with AI. I feel like that topic, especially we got at the end, is kind of like extremely urgent in cybersecurity. So it's good to have that discussion across the line there. If folks want to get in touch with you, is there a better way to do that?
I'm just thinking right now. Well, of course I have my email I can share.
Or
I
LinkedIn, or
have something better, more practical than that, to be honest with you.
it's all good.
Yeah, I will just share my email. I'm sorry, I'm more of a technical guy. I don't have
Totally get
something.
it.
So, or LinkedIn
Yeah,
simple.
that's often the go-to. So
Yeah,
like,
I mean, yeah, I was saying my email, but yeah, LinkedIn, of course. Which was shared a bit earlier in the conversation, I think. Yep.
yeah. Jeff just posted it too. Awesome. Well, thank you very much. And we will see everybody else at the next Defender Fridays.
And that brings us to the end of another Defender Fridays discussion. Support our show by sharing your favorite episodes with a friend, subscribe or give us a rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening from. If you want to be a part of the conversation and join us live, you can register at limacharlie.io/defender-fridays. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you in the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.